funding for Think is made possible by SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How many languages can one person possibly learn, and how are the remarkable few who know dozens of them different from those of us who speak just one or two? At a time when global commerce is so vital and global travel so easy, vast numbers of people are acquiring second and sometimes third languages for practical reasons. But polyglots, people who speak six or more languages, are a different breed altogether, acquiring new languages simply for the sake of learning them, often with no pressing need to communicate in Finnish, Vietnamese, or Inuktitut. Linguist and author Michael Erard is fascinated by polyglots and their overachieving cousins, hyper-polyglots, and he used his 2008 Dobie Paisano Writing Fellowship to work on a book about his investigations. It's called Babel No More, The Search for the World's Most Extraordinary Language Learners. Michael, welcome back to Think.
Hi, Chris. It's great to be on again.
Besides just the number of languages they speak, what are the most important distinctions between polyglots and multilinguals?
One of the things is that hyperpolyglots seem to really, when they learn another language, it's not bringing them closer to their real, actual community.
Mm-hmm.
By learning another language, they're becoming part of an imagined global community. They're becoming global citizens, but it really takes them a little further away from the people that they immediately live around. Another thing is that the hyperpolyglots, multilinguals, when they are learning all of these languages, the languages are changing. They're participating in the organic life of the languages. And in most of the languages that the hyperpolyglots work in, they are receiving that history. They are not actively participating or contributing to the future of that language.
And they're also not necessarily interested in speaking perfectly.
Yeah, they are, I call them professional linguistic outsiders.
Hmm.
They, really don't have a need to, they want to be intelligible, and they want to function in that language with native speakers, but being, matching what a native speaker can do is not something that they are necessarily interested in, and in fact, some people will say that having an accent that sounds too good can be a detriment and can actually be a little dangerous because then you get taken as having maybe language abilities that you don't actually have and people start to speak more quickly or use different vocabulary or things like that.
That's a really interesting point that I think a lot of us forget when we are studying just second languages or maybe for some people third languages. Sometimes there is an advantage to letting people know you are absolutely a foreigner.
Yeah, absolutely, because people will have expected, they will have been, they'll have trained or have a lot of experience with non-native speakers, so they understand what they have to listen for to get through the accent. They understand people will make errors, the sort of constructions, grammatical constructions that people might prefer. So it takes a little bit of training. So certainly there are some languages in the world where people are probably very used to hearing non-native speakers speak. And then there are some other languages where it's very rare for there to be non-native speakers. So, English is a language that we commonly, even Americans are used to hearing non-native speakers use. But a language like Japanese, there's not a very large non-native speaker group. So those people would probably be less accustomed to accommodating a non-native speaker.
So I think sometimes looking at this from afar, one assumes that people who are polyglots and hyperpolyglots must simply pick up languages as if, they can sort of fall asleep listening to a tape and then suddenly they know this language. But in fact, there's in many cases a great deal of effort that goes into this.
That phrase of picking things up was something that actually both the hyperpolyglots use and the multilinguals used. So I went to South India to do research in the book because I wanted to see one of these multilingual communities, a place where it's very common for everybody to speak five or six languages. And there, everyone uses that same expression. And I asked people, so how, when you move to Bangalore, how did you learn Kannada? And they say, oh, I just picked it up.
Is it that simple?
Is it that simple? So you were talking about sort of hyperpolyglots having to really focus on it and work on it. One of the people that I spent a lot of time profiling, a living hyperpolyglot named Alexander Arguelles, he, before he was married and had kids, he used to spend 14 to 16 hours a day working on not just one language, but on a series of languages. And his approach was that learning multiple languages actually provided a hook for each other. Now he does something more like 9 hours a day in 15 or 20 minute chunks. And I think, you know, in the way that we think about, I think commonly geniuses, you know, that this stuff just arrives in their brains somehow. You know, the hyperpolyglots aren't like that. The stuff is outside of them, and they do need to put it into their brains somehow. One of the ways that Alexander used, one of the methods that he used, was something called shadowing. And I actually did some shadowing with him in Hindi, but he put a Walkman on me, and I walked around with the earphones listening to some dialogue in Hindi. And at the same time that I heard the Hindi sounds, he wanted me to pronounce them, to say them. And not only that, but he had me walking around a park in Berkeley and making these exaggerated motions with my arms and my legs. And I felt like a total fool, and I don't know what I was sounding like. But I will say that the Hindi that I learned, or that I heard that day, has really stayed with me. Well enough that I got to use a little bit of it when I went to South India.
So is the thinking that maybe your brain is making bigger and better connections if there's physical activity associated with this kind of learning?
I think there are a couple advantages there. One, you're building a very strong set of contextual cues for you. The adding the kinetic aspect, you know, the part of the brain that is commonly sort of thought to govern language, the Broca's area, this left hemisphere in most people, is also a motor control area. So it's, you know, easy to think that by stimulating through motor activity that part of your brain, that you're also getting the language areas moving as well.
It's funny, though, reading through that section and thinking, well, this makes perfect sense. It also sounds absolutely nothing like any, I took Spanish, any Spanish class I ever had. I was sitting in a row, not encouraged to move very much at all, and speaking only occasionally.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if we really paid attention to how the brain actually works and how, you know, and what really motivates not only individuals but gets the brain going, that foreign language education would be very different. I was in the book, I visited not only, you know, hyperpolyglots, so people who are talented, and multilinguals, people who live in communities, but also people who are maybe a little more ordinary but who are also devoted and committed to learning a lot of languages. And one group is called, in the United States, is called the LEX Language Project. It's based in Japan. It was founded in Japan, where it goes by the name the HIPPO Family Project. And I went to visit an outpost that they have in Chihuahua City. And the motto of this group, which has been around for about 30 years, is that anybody can learn 7 languages. They actually provide support in 23 languages. So you get to pick your 7 languages.
Mm-hmm.
And the theory is that you play these CDs at home in the background, and then you meet up as a group, and you sing songs, you dance dances, you play games, and then in a circle, you go around and you pass a microphone from person to person, and you recite either parts of a story or parts of an introduction, and different people will be working on different languages at different times. And it's just this really fun and inviting and supportive environment in which your anything that you do in those languages is supported and welcomed, such that, you know, I describe myself as a monolingual with benefits. You know, I've studied other languages, but I speak mostly English. And mainly I say that because I don't want people asking me to say stuff in Spanish or Chinese. Mm-hmm. But I showed up in that HIPPO group, and I was just made to feel so welcomed that I introduced myself both in Spanish and in Chinese.
Michael Erard is my guest. He's a linguist and author, also recipient of the Dobie Paisano Writing Fellowship. We're talking this hour about his new book, Babel No More, Search for the World's Most Extraordinary Language Learners. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us at 1-800-933-5372. We'll talk to Michael a little bit more in a few minutes. Right now, we want to give you an opportunity to support the station, help us to make our goal for this hour of raising $4,732. Your contribution right now, jumping on the line, jumping on the internet, is very helpful in doing that, whatever the amount might be, whether you're a Friends level member at $1,500 or above, or a more garden variety member at, you know, $5 or $10 or $20 or $30 a month. We'd love to hear from you at 1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. We have a special offer today during the show from 1 to 2 p.m. First of all, I should say our goal is $4,732 to raise during this hour. And we're hoping that this will entice you to call. This is a special offer, tickets to see Andrea Bocelli at American Airlines Center on Friday, November 30th. That's several months from now, but we have the tickets available to you exclusively with your donation. Until they go on sale to the public in April. So right now, we are offering these to you, and no one else can get them. And your seats are assigned in the exact order that your contribution is received. So the sooner you call 888-694-6931, the better your seats to see Andrea Bocelli will be. And they're available for donation amounts between $150 and $500. So if you call right now, 888-694-6931, you can get all the details. And you can support KERA and get tickets, a pair of tickets to see Andrea Bocelli at the same time.
Can you handle things in the studio for a minute while I go make a call? My mother-in-law, I would be the best daughter-in-law ever if I were to provide tickets to Andrea Bocelli,
sure.
Even next November.
No, I'll just do the next segment of the interview.
You haven't read the book.
How do you know?
You want me to test you?
No, no.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number, or you can go to kera.org. The reality is Jeff and I are a team, and
That's right. Jeff does
amazing work. You know, when we talk about, you know, the guests that we have on here and that we're able to bring to you, so much of that is because of Jeff's very hard work that he's happy to do because he's passionate about the show, about the concept of Think, and about public radio in general. We know many of you share the level of passion that Jeff and I have. You just share it as a listener. We would ask that you apply some of that passion to a gift of financial support in the same way that Craig and Kathy Brazier in Flower Mound have done. Thank you so much for your contribution, Janice Jacobs and Landon Campbell in Dallas. Thank you, Jason and Heidi Judy in Garland. And thank you so much, Justin Jones in Fort Worth, Patricia Stella in Dallas, and Melanie Lekos in Westlake.
Yeah, Chris, if I read all the books for this week's show, you wouldn't have any
I wouldn't have to talk to you next week.
That's right, because it's just you and me. It's just you and me. No, we actually have a great team that helps us put the show on every day, and you hear their names in the credits, and we're really thankful that they're here. And, you know, the show's a testament to Chris's hard work, too, because you can bet she has read the book. And that's why Eileen Gergen in Plano supports the station, Linda Reddick in Plano supports the station, and Iman Tang in Allen. We do have copies of Michael Erard's book available when you join the station at the $120 membership level. Of course, we've got those tickets to see Andrea Bocelli as well. Call right now, 888-694-6931, or contribute online at kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. Learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Michael Erard. He's a linguist and author who has a new book out called Babble No More, The Search for the World's Most Extraordinary Language Learners. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Michael, it's hard enough to imagine for one such as myself in the 21st century learning, 10 languages or more than that, even with, iPod apps and online courses. There was a guy that you write about born in the 18th century who was able to at least communicate, and the number varies, but in dozens of languages by all accounts.
Yeah, you're talking about Giuseppe Mezzafonti, mm-hmm. who was an Italian priest and later a cardinal, born in 1774, and he died in 1849. And, without any benefits of technology that we take for granted now, he was able to learn, some people say, 60-something languages, others say 72, some people even say more. And, so the question is, kind of, how did he do it? Because he didn't travel very much outside of Bologna or Rome. And one way that he did it was, he had very early access to lots of different languages. So he started ancient Greek and Latin at a very young age, say at the age of 4, and was exposed to a wide range of other languages probably by the time he was a teenager. And then by the time that he was in his 20s, he had gained a reputation for speaking a lot of languages, and people started to come to him. Hmm. So he didn't really have to be a traveler. There were hotels in Bologna, and he would go find out if there was an out-of-towner staying there, and he would talk to them. There were times that there were battles outside of Bologna, and the hospitals would be filled with soldiers from all over Europe, and he was going and nursing to the soldiers and picking up languages there. He was also a librarian. So he was working with texts in a bunch of different languages. And then later in his life, he was posted in the Vatican in the evangelical college where people were coming from all over the world to learn how to give homilies and preach and things like that. And that gave him even more access and a lot of opportunities to perform in all of his languages. And he became quite famous for these spectacular displays, not only of speaking a lot of languages, but switching very quickly among them. One writer observed that it was like watching a bird flit from spray to spray.
One thing that's interesting about the short story you just told us is that he seems to have a couple of things in common with a lot of the even contemporary hyperpolyglots that you've heard about and written about. One is that he was male. And another is that this was a really important part of his identity, in addition to being something he was really driven to do.
Yeah. And there's so much right there that you just presented me with. And I guess I'll just go in one direction. The maleness, particularly. When I did an online survey, so was interested in getting answers from people who said that they spoke 6 or more languages. And nearly 70% of the people who responded are male. And the question is, why? And one possibility is that it's entirely cultural, that there's just something about a kind of geek macho posture, right, that you take and that you win points in if you say that you speak a lot of languages. The other possibility is that it could be something that is that's brain related, and in the book I go into some of the neurodevelopmental research that's suggested a link between gender and talents, either verbal talents or spatial talents that are linked through the process of certain hormones being present and over-present during fetal brain development. Mm. All of that is very speculative, and I hesitate to talk about the things that I found both through the survey and that some of the theories suggest, because there's one hypothesis called the Geschwind-Galliberta hypothesis that tries to link handedness, maleness, the presence of immune disorders, and homosexuality and some other things together. And, you know, what I don't want to come across as saying is that if you are gay, you're going to be a good language learner, mm-hmm. Or if you're left-handed, you're... But when people come to me and say, I know somebody who speaks 15 or 20 languages, I would say... If that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that person is left-handed. I wouldn't be surprised if that person were male, and so forth.
So what's the current thinking about the differences that might exist in the brains of extraordinary language learners? I mean, does learning those languages shape their brains, or is there something that they are born with that gives them the ability, perhaps, more than other people, to excel at this?
Yeah, people have been looking at these genius brains for a long, long time and trying to find some sort of anatomical difference. So maybe their Broca's area is bigger than other people's. Maybe their acoustic processing center is bigger than other people's. And as the science has gotten better, and particularly in the era of, you know, brain imaging technologies, we're kind of chasing the answer to that question to a much smaller level, to not only a more molecular level, but to one that operates at a speed that the technologies can't necessarily capture. And so in a sense, that answer is tantalizingly there, but it may not be one that we necessarily have a picture of. I mean, certainly we know from, you know, lots of studies of musicians particularly, and also, interestingly, London taxi drivers, that lots of use and lots of practice changes people's brains physically. But the question is, you can take two people and give them the same amount of training, and their brains will change in different amounts, and their behaviors will be, so they won't be able to perform as well as each other. And so the question is, why is that? So is there something, some factor that in the brains that change very easily, that allows them to do that? And that's not something that we can really put our hands on right now, but in the work on the neurobiology of learning, there's a lot of attention being paid to the nature of, you know, what's called plasticity, so the ability of the brain to rewire itself.
Let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Renata on the line in Richardson. Hi, Renata.
Oh, hi. Hi, Chris. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Chris, I just wanted to share my own observation, not being a linguist, as your guest, of course, is. I have mastered to learn seven languages. English is my seventh.
And wow.
You should have been on my book. Where were you when I was writing my book?
I'm in Richardson, Texas, but I was born and raised in Poland. And my observation is that when I was a child, I was exposed to some English and German in kindergarten. And unfortunately, I did not absorb any of it at all, even though I was taught for years and years. Later on, when I left Poland in my mid-20s, I started learning German by being totally immersed in their culture, of course. I was not in contact with any Poles, so naturally I mastered the language really beautifully, to that extent that my German friends don't believe that I am not a native speaker. So my observation actually is that I think my ear for music has helped me a lot. I used to sing a lot, and I realized that I was able to remember certain sounds and repeat them correctly. And I think this is maybe what has helped me to acquire so many languages and speak them pretty much without an accent, though I have one now. My husband is an Australian, so of course we maintain that Aussie accent at home, as you can hear it.
Well, Renata, before we let you go and get Michael's response to what you said, can you tell us all the languages that you speak and in the order in which you learned them?
Right. Yes, Polish is my native tongue. Then I learned Russian, which was compulsory. Then I learned a little bit of English, German, French, Italian, and Esperanto, believe it or not, an artificial language.
Well, thank you so much for your call. I so appreciate it. What do you have to say to all that, Michael?
The issue of being able to hear sounds and the link with musical ability, mm-hmm. I think, is really interesting. So we were talking just before the call about, you know, innate brain differences, and one of the things that has been found is that people who are able to discriminate speech sounds very easily and efficiently in their brains do have, they're anatomically different than people who don't do that. And what's also involved in what she's saying is some attribute of what's called working memory.
Mm-hmm.
So your ability in the short term to hold all of the parts of a problem in your mind at the same time while you're working them out, and being able to hold a string of sounds, whether it's a string of speech sounds or a string of musical sounds, together while you are maybe trying to reproduce them with your mouth or trying to reproduce them with your fingers, that ability is something that is very genetic, that is heritable, that is very genetically determined. We can train it up, but it can only be trained up to a certain limit. So certainly those two aspects of what she's talking about would be something that she brought to the task of learning languages, and it's great that she's had that much exposure. I wish that I had grown up that way.
Michael Arard is my guest. He's a linguist and author of the new book, Babel No More, The Search for the World's Most Extraordinary Language Learners. We will take more of your calls after this break. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. Of course, we would also ask that if you have not yet already done so, you support our winter membership campaign by calling that other number, 1-888-694-6931, or join the station or support the station my favorite way, which is online. You do that at KERA.org. I'll tell you, I like online contributions, not only because for me it's quick and easy and convenient, but quite frankly, it saves us a little bit of processing and telephone cost associated with each time you make a phone call. Now, if it's most convenient for you to call in, absolutely go for it. But if you could go either way, you might want to help us out, you know, make your pledge go an extra dollar or two and make that online at KERA.org. I want to thank Elizabeth Graham in Denton for her contribution. Thank you, Colin Wood in Fort Worth. Thanks, Nancy Parrish and Jacob Rothberger in Fort Worth. Donald and Elizabeth Burke in Southlake, really appreciate it. Annette and Joshua Brown in Dallas. Janelle Fritz in Keller. And Paul and Meg Dixon in Hearst. Thank you so much for your support of the station. We started the hour with a goal of $4,732. We have chipped that down. We now are hoping to raise an additional $3,210 in order to stay on target. Hey, Jeff Whittington, senior producer of Think, host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know.
Hey, Chris Boyd. Don't forget, you can get your very own copy of Michael Arard's book, Babel No More, The Search for the World's Most Extraordinary Language Learners. You can get a copy of that with our thanks when you join the station with a $120 contribution. That's $10 a month when you become a sustaining member. We also have a special offer this hour. You can see Andrea Bocelli at American Airlines Center Friday, November 30th. 2012 at 8 p.m. Tickets are available for donation amounts between $150 and $500. If you call 888-694-6931, you can get all the details. Again, the number to call and find out about and to reserve your tickets to see Andrea Bocelli and support the station is 888-694-6931. Now, tickets are exclusive to you until they go on sale to the public in April. You can get tickets before anyone else in the market just by supporting KERA, and the seats are assigned in the exact order that contributions are received. So the sooner you call, the better your seats will be. And again, the number 888-694-6931. I want to thank Joe Carolyn McVeigh in Arlington, Anne-Marie Hudson in Dallas, and Anne-Marie is a friend of our producer, Jackie's.
Very nice.
Jackie says, hey, Anne-Marie. Joe Barth in Addison, Dolores Goodrich in Arlington, Alfred Robinson in Denison, and Lawrence and Becky Nance in Carrollton. Thank you so much to each of you.
you might be hearing all these names and thinking, well, why have all those people given contributions to KERA? Well, because like you, they listen to the station all the time. They love the programs on KERA. They may have a special affinity for Think. They may simply just not ever turn off the radio. It's always public radio or nothing. Or maybe public radio is what you turn to. Maybe KERA is where you turn when you really think the information is important. Maybe this is your go-to station when, you know, there is a crisis in the world or something you really feel you need to understand in depth. All of that is worth your financial support. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number to call to make your contribution. You can also do this online at kera.org. As Jeff mentioned, we have tickets to the Andrea Bocelli concert. You can find information about that when you call. We also have copies of Michael Arard's book, Babel No More. It is really a fascinating read. Whether you are someone who does, like our caller Renata, pick up languages and do brilliantly with them, or whether you have struggled for years and years, there's interesting information as well about people who sort of plateau in learning a language, and we'll talk a little bit about that with Michael, but it would be a great book to read if you have found yourself in that situation.
Your Broca's area, well, thank you.
How large is your Broca's area?
Well, you know, it depends. It varies, Chris. It varies. 888-694-6931, online at kera.org. Again, if you're interested in the Andrea Bocelli tickets, you got to call, because that's how we keep track of it. But you can check out all the thank you gifts, all the other thank you gifts online at kera.org. Check out what you get from kera.org. You know, we've got this click and play feature on the Think page, where I go and, you know, load a link to the podcast every day on the previous day's Think show for that, you know, page for that each show. And it lives there. It lives there indefinitely. Our NPR distributed podcast is only up for like 5 days, but you can go back now and listen to older shows that are more than 5 days old. And it's absolutely free for you to do that. So that's a brand new thing that we've been bringing you for just a few months.
That many of you have asked for.
They have. You have. You've asked for it. A more interactive website. We've got it now for the Think Show. It's worth your support.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also make your contribution online at kera.org, where you can also check out thank you gifts. Consider a sustaining membership, which makes a pretty significant gift quite affordable by dividing it up into monthly draws from your checking account. Again, we'd love to hear from you at kera.org. Back in 2 minutes with Michael Arard.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. Learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is linguist Michael Arard. His new book is called Babel No More, The Search for the World's Most Extraordinary Language Learners. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. We have an email here from Paul in Terrell, Michael, who writes, is there a difference between learning to read and to speak a language? I can decipher a newspaper story in 4 European languages, but can barely make myself understood in any of them, and I cannot follow a foreign news broadcast.
Interesting. Yeah, so, I mean, they are different skills, and they require different, you know, sorts of training. Some people would say that, so certainly a lot of the hyperpolyglots, particularly the historical figures, they did actually read more of their languages than they spoke them. And that goes to, I think, you know, our modern sense or a modern standard for what it means to speak a language is very much based on spoken communication. Still, I mean, if he wants to, Paul was his name, if mm-hmm. Paul wants to be speaking, then his literacy, those skills could be leveraged. It would just depend on the context and how willing he is to put himself out there.
What accounts for, and we all know someone like this, if this doesn't describe us particularly, people who genuinely try to acquire an additional language and work at it and don't sort of, you know, do it halfway, but get to a point after which they don't really progress very much.
Yeah, there was some work that was done at the Foreign Service Institute, you know, which is the State Department's language school. And they face this problem all the time because they're spending huge amounts of resources trying to get future diplomats very high levels of proficiency in a language. And some people just can't progress to something closer to the native speaker level, which is the standard that FSI uses. And one answer or one sort of approach was to look at the cognitive styles of the two groups. And so the people who often tended to be able to break through that plateau were people who were very precise in not only being able to hear, but precise in the ways that they saw the meanings of words. But there were also people who were very flexible and open in the ways that they were learning things. And I think that, you know, the message really for everybody is that that even going to, you know, even learning a language or any other skill to the plateau is great.
Yeah.
To the degree that where you are at your plateau is, you know, at a different level of ability than what you were before. So in the book, I call it this will to plasticity, sort of really the commitment to having a different brain tomorrow and a better brain than the one that you had yesterday. And the hyperpolyglots really embody that. And even though I've talked a lot about here about how their brains might be different, you can take a lot about the ways that they consciously undertake their projects as their language learning projects is something that everyone else can adopt and still get something out of, because really most of us don't want to or need to speak 12 languages or 72.
Let's go back to the phones now. We have Alpha on the line in Fort Worth. Hi, Alpha.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Great show.
Thank you.
My question is the interest in the language has anything to do with the interest in the culture? Because personally, I speak four languages internationally, and I'm from Africa pretty much. African dialects, there are so many of them that you don't even know which one to catch. But your average African can speak up to 5 or 6 dialects.
Wow.
Personally, I speak 10 dialects. And the reason why I'm pretty much interested in this, people that are pretty much interested in languages have something that catches them when it comes to culture. What do you think about it?
What do you think, Michael?
So sure. When, you know, that language, there's a point when learning about the culture just can't proceed if you don't know the language, and vice versa. A lot of the hyperpolyglots, really, they are interested in the way that the sounds hook up to meanings and the way that the grammar structures work. They may never actually go to a place and be able to use language with those, and so they might say that they're interested in the culture, but they don't necessarily get to that place where learning more of the language requires cultural knowledge and vice versa. But I think that culture provides context and meaning and relevance to what you learn in the language, and so that's one of the reasons that immersive language learning is so effective, just one of the reasons, but the two things are hugely important.
You know what's so interesting, Michael? We had an interview on the show a number of years ago about people who are like world champions at Scrabble. And often they know a huge number of words, and they're not, it's different in a way. They're not specifically interested in the meanings of the words. They just need to know them and know how they're spelled correctly and how they work in the game. But in a way, when you talk about some hyperpolyglots being interested in the language almost for its own sake, there seems to be a parallel there.
There does, yeah. There's an interest in patterns. There's an interest in structure. There's an interest in recombination. But I will say that the hyperpolyglots that both historically and living that I met who seem to be the happiest people
mm-hmm.
are the ones who live in and work in multilingual environments where learning another language is just another part of your job.
Yeah.
So you think of Mezzofanti at the Vatican, you know, even though you know, there were languages in which he just had a number of polite phrases, but he was talking to native speakers and using those phrases as part of his function as a high-ranking member of the church. So to that degree, it was meaningful for him. I spent some time talking with a translator at the European Commission who translates in 13 languages, and he says that, you know, learning languages is not hard for him. He'd rather be, you know, cooking and working in his garden, but he does this language thing. And in that context, you're given 2 months a year professional development to go study languages that you know or to study new languages. And he's a super happy guy.
What does it take to stay up on a language that you feel like you have mastered to the extent that you can say that you know that language if you're not speaking it with people actively on a regular basis?
Yes, that's definitely something that I've faced myself mm-hmm. with, and that's why I don't want to say that I speak Spanish or Chinese. It would take me too long to warm those languages up. There's a method called timed or spaced review that tries to beat the curve of memory decay and basically decrease the decay. But there's some interesting research that was done with the amount of Spanish that people remembered from their high school days, and that even after 40 years, people still have a certain amount of language that they can recall. What appears to happen is that there's a very rapid early decline, but then it stabilizes.
Hmm.
So even though we might think, oh God, high school Spanish was so long ago, there's nothing there. There's probably more there than you think, and it's just a matter of putting yourself in contexts where you can reactivate it. It's not a matter of, you know, it not being there. It's a matter of how you get it out.
Yeah, you forgot that you knew a word until you heard it again, and then suddenly you've got it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, this European Commission translator would say that his experience with languages was such that even though he couldn't exactly remember the word, he could remember that he had known it at one point.
Hmm. Linguist and author Michael Erard is a recipient of the Dobie Paisano Writing Fellowship, which he used to write his new book, Babble No More, The Search for the World's Most Extraordinary Language Learners. Michael, it's been a great conversation as always. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Chris, for having me.
Thanks to all of you listening to the conversation this afternoon. Thanks especially to those of you who are helping to keep the station on track for its goal, fundraising goal for the hour. The amount of you who have called has been really gratifying. We started the hour with a goal of, I think, $4,710, and your contributions have brought that now down to just a little over $3,000. So give us a call. Let us hear from you. KERA.org is actually not the place you can call us. You can go online. you can also call us at 1-888-694-6931. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. It has been, you know, it's been a week of fundraising, and our pledge brains are almost fully used to it. But yeah, we are really looking forward to meeting the goal of wrapping this drive up in half the time it took last winter. And just to remind you, if you've just joined us, maybe you have been out of town and haven't been listening to the membership campaign.
But welcome back.
We did a 24-day drive last winter, and this year we want to do it in 12 days. And, you know, our goals are designed to keep us on track to make that goal. You know, it's a beautiful day out there after a couple of days of really torrential rain here in North Texas. And, you know, we're hoping that you'll do something nice, do something good for yourself, for your community, and support KERA. And we have ways that we can thank you when you do it.
That is right. We have copies if you are interested in Michael Erard's new book, Babble No More. Really interesting book. Hopefully you heard much of the conversation that we had in the last hour. In the previous hour, we had The Folly of Fools, The Logic of Deceit and Self-Deception in Human Life with Robert Tribbers. We have copies of that book available as a thank you gift as well. Those you can get when you make a contribution at or above the $120 level, $10 a month, as we like to say, on the sustaining membership plan. And I think sometimes, you know, you're all set and you go on the website and you think, okay, I'm going to make a contribution. And then your mind wanders or you think, wait, I'm about to promise, you know, $10 or $20 or $30 a month. Why would I do that? And then you have to stop and remind yourself once again, well, you do it because you've been using the service all this time, that you are continuing to guarantee that you will have KERA in your life. It wouldn't be here if someone hadn't come ahead before you and made these contributions. We don't have too many people, you know, once you become a contributor, I don't think too many people regret having made that contribution. When you do something good for your community, you usually don't regret it later. It's not like, you know, buying a pair of jeans a size too small and thinking, these will certainly fit in 2 months. It doesn't happen that way. KERA will definitely fit you and flatter you in 2 months.
I'm trying to follow.
I know you've probably never been there, but believe me, there are people out there who know exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, you can make your contribution online at KERA.org. You know, it's funny. We used to say pledge, and it was the pledge drive, and how many pledges did we get? And because we you know, back in the day, you would call up and you would say, okay, I do promise.
I hereby pledge.
Yeah, I do promise to send you money when you send me the bill. And of course, you can still ask for an invoice, and we can send that to you when you call. But by and large, most people just go ahead and put it on their credit or debit card.
That's
and just,
how we do business.
And go ahead and make the contribution. And so that's why we're asking you to you know, you don't really have to you know, go online and say, I'm going to do this now, and then when it comes, I'm going to pay it. And we don't have to worry about that anymore because things move a lot quicker. And we want to make it as easy and as convenient for you to make your contribution as possible. And of course, we want to put your contribution to work right away. We also used to talk a lot about using your credit card. If you use your credit card, your contribution goes to work right away, and that's still the case. But now, by and large, the majority of you do make your contribution with a credit and debit card. And actually, you can put your sustaining membership on your credit or debit
card. That's relatively new, and it's nice. Yeah,
yeah, it's very nice. And so it just charges you whatever you designate each month. Or you can set it up with a bank draft. It's really easy to do. There are so many ways that you can do it. We run the risk of making it, you know, the choice slows everyone down. But really, the decision we are asking you to make is just to go ahead and support the station and do something good for your public radio community.
You know, there are a number of other radio stations, including radio stations that focus on news and information in this market. We completely understand that. We completely understand that they don't ask you for money, but they also are not KERA. There's a reason you're sitting here on day whatever it is of the membership campaign, and there's a reason that you are with us during the pledge drive, the campaign fundraising drive, and after. The reason is that KERA is different.
I think it's day seven.
Day seven.
I've lost track.
I saw your fingers moving. I didn't know.
And then I realized maybe you thought I was giving you a cue or something.
Right. I was thinking that we were running out of time.
There's this whole sign language of time and stuff. No, we have time for you to make your call right now to 888-694-6931. If you want to get a set of Andrea Bocelli tickets, go ahead and call 888-694-6931. These are tickets for the Andrea Bocelli concert at American Airlines Center Friday, November 30th. So that's next fall. But the tickets are going to go on sale to the public in April. Between now and then, you have first crack at these tickets. We've got different donation amounts between $150 and $500. If you call 888-694-6931, you can get all the details. Seats are assigned in the exact order that contributions are received. So if you call now, the better your seats will be as compared to if you call a couple of days from now. So call right now, get those tickets. And again, these are exclusive to you, KERA supporters, until they go on sale. I don't know when we're going to cut it off during the membership campaign, but no one else is buying tickets until April. So you have a chance right now to get really good seats for the show and support KERA.
You can't even yet camp out wherever that would be for the Andrea Bocelli concert.
Do people still do that for concert tickets?
I don't know that they do it for Andrea Bocelli, but maybe
they
don't.
Probably do. Probably... They probably do for Andrea Bocelli.
Jeff and I are both over 40, so we don't know about this stuff anymore.
we know people who camp out for iPhones and things like that.
I now know people who camp out to get their kids into a really good public school. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number to call to support KERA. You can also go online to KERA.org. Look, you know public radio matters. You know that your investment in your own learning and your own access to information is worth the money. Are you still laughing at me?
I'm thinking what I would camp out for because I don't have kids. I might camp out to get like some really fantastic new chickens that are coming out or something. Like
new chickens.
For pets.
All right.
You know, for egg.
It's almost the same as having four kids.
I was giggling. What would I camp out for? Chickens. 888-694-6931. Go online to KERA.org. You don't have to camp out to support KERA. You can, you know, I guess you could camp out waiting to make your contribution.
We don't encourage it, though.
But all you have to do is call or click over to KERA.org, and please do it now.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can go to the website, which is KERA.org. Check out thank you gifts there. If you're interested in the Andrea Bocelli tickets, for those you have to call. But any of the other thank you gifts you can do online. And, of course, you can set up memberships online. Again, we have remaining copies of Babbel No More, The Search for the World's Most Extraordinary Language Learners, available at or above the $120 contribution level. And The Folly of Fools by Robert Trivers, our first hour guest. His book is still available as well. If you want to make a $240 contribution, we would love to send you both of those books. Again, please get in touch with us at KERA.org or 1-888-694-6931. Thanks.